Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. This episode marks the third anniversary of the podcast. So thank you to everyone who has listened since the beginning, who has listened since whenever they've tuned in, who have caught it here and there, who've told their friends, all of that. I truly appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to goof off like this and have fun and be able to share it with you and have you guys enjoy it as well. We have an interview today with Yola Jimenez. She is a second generation mezcal maker, and she is one of the trio of women who own Yola Mezcal. It is, of course, named after her. I did this interview for The Mermaid originally, a bar here in Los Angeles, and it was done on Instagram Live. So the feed is a little bit wonky sounding in that way, but you can still hear it. It's still good. Yola sounds amazing. I sound like my dorky old self. So sit back, relax, pour yourself a little shot of Mezcal, preferably Yola. I do really, really like it. And listen to her tell her story about being a woman in Mexico working in Mezcal, which is challenging. Also, being women distillers, that is something, the way they give back to the village that they run this company in, because it's been there for a while. It was her grandfather's first. And the way that they are trying to just forward women in music, because one of the owners is Leaky Lee, by holding the Yola Dia festivals, which have happened here in Los Angeles a couple times, which are all female based. That's where I saw Megan Thee Stallion a couple years ago. Yeah, there's all of that. So sit back and relax. We've got Yola Jimenez. Join us. I say Yola Mezcal, but I really mean Yola Jimenez. So hold on one moment and let's see if we can get her on here. Exciting thing for me anyway. And we are waiting to join in again. My name is Mo Herms. I am with Music and Booze with Mo. And Yola Jimenez.
Hola, Yola.
Hola.
Hey, ¿qué tal? ¿Cómo estás?
I was going to say, don't start with Spanish on, because I was put once in my life and it was a long time ago.
Well, you sound really good. You have a good accent, too.
I grew up with it. I'm one of those gringas, you know, who was born in the States with a Latin mom. So we were, speaking English wasn't something for at that time.
Right.
So I had to speak when I was older. And there's lots of stuff like that here in the States. So you, with Yola Mezcal, have kind of reclaimed
your family and your brand and all of that. So
yeah.
For anyone who's just joining in, this is Yola Jimenez, who is here, and she is one of the co-founders of Yola Mezcal. And actually, I'd love to ask you, like, just tell the story of Yola Mezcal, how it came about. I know you tell this story all the time, but we have some new folks here who may not have heard of it before. We have been a huge supporter here at the Mermaid of Yola Mezcal since the day we...
I was going to say, you guys have been incredible about supporting and every brand that you have and the way that you...
Well, we're a female-owned and operated business, so it only makes sense for us to try to highlight other female-owned and operated businesses. And it's especially helpful when it's something so tasty.
It's really good. But I think we were chatting about some stuff today, too, and we were saying how important other women have been to supporting the brand and keeping us by from the beginning. It's been incredible, and I think it's important to say that it makes such a difference when we support each other.
I think in general, our culture in the last few years, we've seen a lot more of the women supporting women as opposed to the stereotypical women fighting women.
Exactly. Which you also hear that a lot, and I think men still believe it, and it has been completely the opposite of my experience, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's almost never happened. Yeah. And on the other hand, women are very loyal and supportive and take care of you. So once they like you and they become a part of what you want to do, then they really stay. Becomes a part. I feel like we do a lot of that, which I love. Yeah.
The women supporting women thing. And I know that's of the brand. You've integrated that very much so into the brand of Yola Mezcal, which I think is incredible. Incredible.
It's basically our core system. And like going back to your question on how it began, it was my co-founders, Gina and Lee, we became friends. I've met them in different times in Mexico City. Gina 12 years ago and Lee 10 years ago. And we became friends. I mean, introduced them to Mezcal and we started chatting about. We became really good friends, and I came to LA to spend time with them, and then they went to Oaxaca and saw the farm, and they got very interested in Mezcal, and we started talking about having a company that would make all of the things that we were talking about and things that we want to do differently. So having a female-owned company who's concerned about keeping traditional Mezcal alive, which is very important for us, because it was at the time when Mezcal was completely exploding, and you could see so many brands happening and how it was changing very quickly. And how
the gentrification, in a sense.
Completely. But it was a really random gentrification, because Mexico is not exactly a place where that happens very often. It's still very classist and very per section. So Mexico City is huge, and it's, you know, the capital, and it's like all of this stuff happened, and the rest of the country is something that has been that way. So for something that has existed for 300 years, mm-hmm. that everyone knew about, but it was considered like the peasant Indian dream that nobody in Mexico City would have, to be the success story was great. I mean, and I think it's one of those very random things that happen once in a generation. You know, my grandfather, who started the farm, and I remember when he was dying and I was talking about wanting to make mezcal, and he actually laughed at me and he said, nobody will ever pay for mezcal. it's a Oaxacan thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, within 12 years, you can see huge change.
I was familiar with mezcal because I grew up in San Diego. So I grew up with enough native Mexicans who would come across the border, who are maybe older, their families, they also had made mezcal at home, or bacanora, some other agave spirits.
Yes.
Have a completely different interpretation of how we are drinking it today. And same thing for them, it wasn't anything special. One of our relatives, or not relatives, a friend of ours, joked about using it as gasoline in his Jeep as well as drinking it, you know? That was sort of, he's like, oh, we drink it, but just in case, we could do this with it as well. And
yeah.
I don't think, you know, a lot of folks didn't take it quite as seriously. It's almost like moonshine in the the United States,
yeah,
in Colombia, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, for sure. I think Mexico City people really thought it was something crazy like that.
But then I started noticing in the mid-2000s that the mezcal that was becoming available didn't necessarily taste like gasoline anymore, and it was wonderful. And so when did you guys start the brand of Yola? Eight or so?
We started really becoming friends about 10 years ago, and had another very small brand just to try different things in the Palenque, in the farm. And then that I worked with a few restaurants. So very, very small. And, the brand really, about 6 years ago, we went to Oaxaca with a specific about working with women and bathing directly, which is something to do. And I said, what to do about 10 years ago? What, you know, the controversial events. My grandfather's farm in this very small town, rural Oaxaca in the mountains. People still in the old school way.
Yeah, yeah.
That idea was first considered to be crazy, but we got into some conversation. But then, you know, within a couple of years, it was so clear that it worked. That the women were happy, they were choosing it out, bring their kids, and this is that we to them and make sure that it was something that they were doing at the way they felt worked, instead of and saying, okay, you have to do this or that. So I think that was a great way to start the company, and then we did everything ourselves. It was a project from the beginning. We designed, like, the bottle and the label, and we brought bottles ourselves back from Oaxaca and sort of put in places, and took a couple of years of just basically and not thinking about it. We were going to create that's
for you. I know I'm moving around a little bit because my reception's a little funny. So basically something I read earlier too about the brand. I mean, you guys are revolutionary because you brought in women to work on this, and you're giving directly, paying the women directly, and allowing them to create what I'm sure is a very productive work environment because they're happy.
Yeah.
But you also, in the early days, I think I read something about how when you would be in Mexico and you'd go to take meetings, I mean, Latin American countries are very patriarchal. So you would have to kind of drag your father in with you, and then they would actually have a discussion with you, you know. So that was the thing I read earlier.
It took years. I mean, when I first started really going to the having a proper conversation about production and schedule, I would make it work. They wouldn't look at me at all in the beginning. It took a couple, and then when my father told me, the interaction was quite different. What made me really angry is that women doing all of the work behind. And I mean, every woman was cleaning and taking care of everything and feeding, but actually doing hard work too. And there would be more women working than men in this town. And all of the interactions will have to go through this work that we make would be the one that would be making all of the choices in the future for everybody, including mine. And I hated that. And how would a different world would be if we just said that, talk to your wife, and then we make a plan about and it's just, you know, you guys can have all of the other brands, we'll just do this brand this way.
Yeah, leave this one, yeah.
Let's give it a try. And then he's like, your funeral.
Wow. And so something too, not only have you, so tell me too, you have all the women working there, and that, you know, they can bring their families, they can set their hours. Also, I'm of the impression that you guys also give back to the community in other ways.
Yeah. I mean, we also didn't want to, a lot of the problems with mezcal, I feel, the brands are owned by people who aren't from Oaxaca. So it started with people who had money from Mexico City to go to Oaxaca and buy the juice and not worried about anything because they just want to sell it in Mexico City. And now that it's a group, you have big alcohol corporations investing in that. When it's traditionally very Oaxaca, done with families and in a way of life that's very particular. They have a house and they have their own animals and they do things local.
Yeah.
And that is one of them. And it's done families and every part of it, and it's the great beauty of Mexico, in my opinion. And then I'm from Oaxaca, my family's from Oaxaca. My grandfather grew up in a town exactly like with that lifestyle, all about. So my idea was how to implement something like having a brand that also with the tradition and bringing also things, because I don't think things need to have like this version of tradition that never changes. Like, of course things should change. Women choices made on everybody, but how also you respect how they want to live their lives. So we went there and asked what would be the most useful way of implementing having a farm that works with women. It's not the same in mezcal, palenque, and employing women. I think one of the really important things, or like something that would make for real change in the world, is if actual space not just have women, but were also thought by women and had a space how women want to work, and that would really create a lot of difference. And it's something that doesn't even really happen in the most forward thinking of rich countries. So we partner with them and created a palenque together. It was how they want to cook, what time they want to do it, how many hours to work, if they want to bring their children, what situation, and having other ways. They are interested in so many things, in book, in music, and if they want to hear about what bars we sell the mezcal in. And we try to implement all of that within the farm and the palenque. So it doesn't feel like, what I really loved about first going there is that you didn't feel like going to work. It was a live, breathing space where they would make mezcal, because people living there and it was part of their lives. So we want to make the palenque place where it all kind of feels like a home, a lot of interactions. So we pay them directly and they choose their own hours to try to bring whatever ideas and things that we can. And we support associations in Mexico that are trying to give a version of equal pay. And then here is day one. Event. We don't do events just or cocktails. We always try to be as a donation. ECLU and Parenthood a lot, and whatever women organization that want to do some. So that's
pretty much like you made the village more of a village, you know, because it's serving itself so well. And that the community is so strong, and partially because of the way you've developed the business in the community.
Yeah, I think so.
Incredible.
And I think it's something that we learn from them. We learn from them, and we try to implement in the office. You know,
it's a much more pleasant way to think of a company town.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like that. With Mexico, it's like everyone is welcoming, and it's always mezcal. Are happy to have a life that includes all of it, but, you know, we don't have this.
When I think of it, my fingers turn to fists. I never did anything with you, man. But no matter what I try, you'll beat me with your bitter lies. So call me crazy, hold me down, make me cry. Get off now, baby. It won't be long till you be lying, living your own hands.
Something else that you guys have done with the brand is, I know that music is an important part of your brand. I was at the Yola Dia Festival here in Los Angeles last summer. It was so much fun, but I remember you guys did a couple other events at the Wiltern here in Los Angeles too. So yeah. I know that you've incorporated that into the brand as well. Of course, Leaky Lee is one of your partners and she's a well-known musician. So, but I think that that's something that kind of works for all of you, because Gina, I think, was a stylist and a chef. You guys all have very creative
vibes.
So how did you bring music into the fold of this brand?
I think we were also so interested in bringing everything that we liked into the brand. The mezcal, the beginning and the juice, which includes all of our interests, women, and it has seen us become, you know, because we really started years ago and had Tina's grown up. Leaky has a bit of this thing. So I love that about the brand, that we get to explore and do things with, you know, Yola Dia had an art installation. We got to work with a bunch of female identifying art. And then through Leaky's connection, we've been able to do different things with that and work with a lot of people. But also, like, we've met so many wonderful chefs. It's the amount, I mean, I talk about in Oaxaca working with the women too, which I was so excited about, but I didn't know how many great people has also got open doors in America of everyone that we've met that have incredible projects and are trying to do things differently. I think with Yola Dia, that's what we wanted to show and support.
Yola Dia is also women-focused.
Yeah.
So everyone at Yola Dia, it was all female artists of various ranges, some that were more well-known than others. So you get to break some new artists, as well as art. So
yeah.
It takes that female empowerment side and continues. Who, if you... What's a wish list for you for a Yola Dia show? Who are a couple artists that you would absolutely love to book on the stage at your next Yola Dia when we can all be in a crowd again?
Wouldn't that be the day? I really hope that we are.
It will happen. It's just going to take a minute, but it will happen.
Yeah, but I think it's important to, like, think about one to
yeah, how it's going to be.
to be excited about. But I mean, I would love to still, because we brought some food to go that I thought it was really, I think if I could bring small local restaurants from Mexico City, bring them for a one day pop up. That's my dream. And I think
people food
here in, like, people in LA love it. Like, we. And stuff like that. That would be
almost anything in Los Angeles, almost any kind of ethnic food. So yes, they would go crazy for that. So you would make a Yola Dia that would have more of the food aspect to it then?
Exactly. And like a food aspect also of things that you can't get in LA. Like proper, I mean, every food, okay, that's the right, like particular Mexico City food, and then hopefully even a couple of Oaxacan food that I really like. So that would be my absolute dream about having a space where people can go and just have crazy like that. And then maybe just have somebody from, like, my younger days, like one of those, like, music that really inspired me. Made me cry, like Fiona Apple or something like that would be fun.
Yep, Fiona Apple and, like, Missy Elliott. They were kind of,
imagine.
Right? Those two back in the day, they were the ones that made you like, yes, yes.
redefine kind of womanhood too in so many ways. I think we can get kind of that. But my favorite thing about the festival, it was how it was very different and inclusive. And even a lot of people thought it, when you actually thought it, you know, you would think it would, or someone skip the friend, have every kind of music and every type of identity and gay identity. So more than a specific place, I'd like to be able to grow that. And because the base of, or the basic idea was to make a festival about being a woman, like the complexities of that, and it's so different and it's huge. We want to represent that. So I would love to have completely random, crazy selection of artists. Don't look at each other.
And I love that.
That everyone was like a woman, and just makes me we are like that. Yeah. That's,
you know, in thinking about this, I remember a quote by a singer-songwriter that I like a lot. Her name is Nico Case, and she does sort of country kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember she said that she was tired of people asking her what it's like to be a well-regarded female singer-songwriter, when she said, can't we just all be singer-songwriters?
Yeah.
And people have said that when we talk about being a female bar, you're a female-owned brand, and sometimes people will say, you know, do you have to use that? Do you have to say female-owned and female this? I'm like, yeah, I believe at this time we do.
Yeah.
But that one day we won't. One day it won't be strange. One day just having a show that can, like, having a concert that consists of a variety from all genres and walks of life of performers that all happen to be women won't be weird.
It wouldn't be necessary, but I completely agree with you.
But right now it's necessary.
Right now it's necessary. And the amount of stuff that we still have to go, it's, you know, from having a brand, it's something that at first we were told to not say publicly. When we started the brand, it was before Me Too and so many of things being public in a way that I think really changed the really positive way. But before, like, they were like, oh, you wanna have an alcohol brand and be an all-female company? Don't say that. If you want to do it, fine, but don't say it out loud. We'll never respect you. We had years of that when we were starting the brand. And even with Yola Dia, like the main, because we work with bigger, you know, companies too. Yeah. And we were in charge of the brand. They were like, this is crazy. It will never work. People don't care about that. They don't want a female festival. They don't want to have like a black and a trans and a white festival with like older women. Like, all of these conversations are very important because there's so many people out there who don't believe in it, who also don't think it will work. And then you make one and people are really into it and they want it. And people are more complex and they are hungry for different kinds of representation that still and being a woman still don't have the same space that any of the other people have, and you still have to ask the men in charge for so when that changes, yeah, I'll stop calling woman, but not now.
I think it'd be nice that when we reach the point where you don't have to say those things, but right now by saying them, it's encouraging others, you know, to step up. And because if you're not saying it, it's just another event. If you do say it, okay, we've said this female owned and operated, but there are the girls out there who didn't know this was something they could do.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't know. And in your case, your grandfather had an agave farm and he made peasant juice. And you came along and said, we can actually, this is delicious, and we can sell it to the world.
Yeah.
And people didn't want to, you know, take you as seriously at first because you were a woman. That was it. And now you've shown everyone that a group of women can come in, have this amazing juice, and sell it to the world, and have a great time with it, and teach people about it, you know? And other women will want to do this.
Yes. And to speak to women, too, as consumers that are intelligent and great, not like all of the alcohol companies that just have like some guy, older guy with like a bunch of girls. Like all of that, if we make brand, if women are in charge of things, I think it'll make a difference. And just 20 years, inches heavy. Mm-hmm. We need to keep it going.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think we've been on this call, this interview, for about a half an hour.
It went by.
Oh, no. Here we are talking. I'm very good at talking, and you're actually not so bad yourself. But I don't know if there's something, if you wanted to say anything to any of our folks who are watching today. Anyone who comes to the Mermaid is very familiar with Yola. I had to grab a bottle because we didn't show it earlier. It's backwards. Look how this bottle is almost empty because, oh, see? You can make so many drinks. This bottle is almost empty. I have a full bottle right next to me, though, so we're not missing it. But I'm happy that we've turned it on. How can people find Yola? I know in Los Angeles, it's in some of the boutique shops like Barker and K&L and things like that.
K&L, so all of the boutique platform, you can find them there. And then there is
a locator on your website or anything?
And then you can buy them directly on the website.
Oh, cool.
Probably the easiest.
Yeah, especially right now.
And then there are some restaurants that are doing cocktails and stuff like that. And we really encourage everyone, their local restaurant and their local bar, as much as they can.
Sure. And there's a Yola Instagram. So it's at Yola Mezcal that people should follow for updates. And the website is just Yola Mezcal, if I remember correctly.
Okay, yeah.
And I think do you guys have a Spotify presence too? I know you did for Yola Dia.
I think we definitely did for Yola Dia, and then we do this thing with everyone, which I think because they're not exactly your usual newsletter.
Here, you cut out for just a second, so roll back.
That we do this thing, we have a newsletter that we started recently where Lika does very fun playlists and we also cool. Different stuff. And that people have been really liking those. So anyone that wants to be part of, they can just send us their email and we do a lot of good food and music and charities and women focused things.
So they can sign up for that newsletter on the Yola Mezcal website.
Yes.
Okay, and they'll get some Leaky Lee approved playlists from that as well.
Very good food from Gina. Yeah.
Because Gina was a chef. So you each one of them. I love it. I love it. It's the trio of very strong women that created this really wonderful thing that you're sharing with the world. I think it's great. I am so excited. I mentioned for a moment, my family is Colombian and my mom taught cumbia. There's Arlene, poor ladies. Also considered peasant dance. So
cumbia?
Cumbia. Cumbia was peasant, you know, that was just out in the mountains where people did that. Nobody, it wasn't serious dance, but now it's incorporated into so much. And like you were saying with the peasant juice of mezcal, and it's taken over the world, you know, in the last 10 years. It is so big. So here's to the peasants as well, right? Peasants know what's up.
Cumbia.
Pardon?
Yeah.
You love cumbia?
Peasants know. I love a cumbia.
And yeah, so sometime when we're in the same space, I probably still have some kumbha moves, so we can give it a try. I know, right? We're like, we're ready. We're going.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Yola. I so appreciate you being here with the Mermaid.
And thank you so much.
So I'm so excited to pump your brand. And if there's anything else you want to tell our Mermaid audience, well, we've got them.
No, just try to support small brands, local places, and keep together, feel
safe, right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I hope to see you again in real life when we can.
Me too.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Ciao, everybody.
Thank you so much to Yola Jimenez for being a guest on the podcast. I couldn't think of someone better to celebrate our third anniversary with. I just really respect what the Yola brand stands for. I know it sounds like I'm pimping them out, but I truly am a fan of the mezcal and the ethics behind the brand. So I am proud to pimp them up, and I can highly recommend them to you guys if you want to go get yourselves a mezcal that you can sip on or make some tasty drinks out of. So thanks, Yola, for telling us all about what you guys stand for and talking about music. So there is a playlist, a Yola playlist, that is over on the SheBMO Spotify profile, full of the artists who have played at the various Yola Dia festivals, either the whole day one or the evening ones, whatever, but go check that out. And in the background, we are listening to Leaky Lee, who is one of the co-owners of the brand of mezcal and usually a performer. You've probably heard this song and maybe didn't realize that's who it was, or maybe a lover. So yes, thank you to Yola. Thank you to all of you. And go get yourself a bottle of that mezcal and you'll be supporting all kinds of good things. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com, and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search SheBMO on Spotify, SheBMO. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.